Deutsche Welle, Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet. I'm Irene Quayle. Good to be back with you. Coming up on the show...
I choose agriculture as a business.
I've chosen agriculture as my business because you can make good profits and you're your own boss. And there are no chances that somebody else can fire you.
In Kenya, young people are rediscovering the joys of farming as an alternative to life in city slums. But in Ecuador, banana farming comes at a high cost.
Wherever there's a concentration of banana workers, the level of children born with disabilities increases.
The price we pay for food from the land. Those stories and more coming up in this edition of Living Planet. Across Europe, intensive farming is worrying environmental groups who say farmers cause pollution and some governments aren't doing enough to stop them. In the UK, a recent report revealed that rivers, air and land are being seriously contaminated by farms on a regular basis. But many farmers and the owners of so-called mega farms have never been prosecuted. And as Britain prepares to leave the European Union, seeking to shake off what it says are the shackles of too much red tape from Brussels, campaigners fear pollution from agriculture will only get worse. Nick Martin reports.
So this looks like a lovely, clear stream with clean water that you'd think you'd be able to drink.
Mark Lloyd is the chief executive of the Angling Trust, an organisation set up to promote the rights of freshwater fishermen.
But actually, this is a very polluted stream because of all the silt and soil, effectively, which is being washed off farmers' fields whenever it rains heavily.
In a video filmed in a small river in western England, it explains how farm pollution is contributing to a 50% decline in freshwater species. And while Britain has made substantial gains in reducing sewage and industrial pollution, he says agriculture is now the number one polluter of its rivers and lakes.
This gravel here in the bed of the river is a vital habitat, not only for invertebrates, the insects which are food for fish, but also for fish themselves. They lay their eggs in amongst this gravel. It's like a nest for them. So trout and salmon, but also barbel and chub, will lay their eggs in amongst these gaps between the stones. But if it's polluted with silt, then all those gaps, those little gaps between the stones, get filled up with silt. So this little habitat needs to be preserved, and we need to keep silt and soil out of our rivers and keep it on the fields where it can grow crops.
What the Angling Trust has noticed for years was recently uncovered by investigative journalists working with The Guardian. They published previously hidden figures revealing more than 5,000 cases of farm pollution across Britain between 2010 and 2016. Almost half involved dairy farms, and you can see why. The average dairy cow produces some 50 kilos of manure each day. Cases included slurry or manure seeping into local rivers and onto beaches, toxic fumes from animal waste and animal carcasses not being properly buried. In one incident, some 10,000 dead chickens were dumped by one farm in nearby woodland, threatening public health. Current legislation allows for fines of up to £50,000, that's $65,000, and up to 6 months in prison for the worst offenders. But the investigation revealed prosecutions for agricultural pollution remained low, at just over 100 between 2010 and 2016. In many cases, farms caught polluting the local area continue to receive government subsidies. Farmers have put some of this rise in pollution down to a crisis facing the dairy industry. 2 years ago, milk prices plummeted due to falling demand. But Kiera Box, a campaigner for the environment group Friends of the Earth, says the issue can't just be blamed on small-scale farmers struggling to stay afloat.
The farms that we're seeing that are contributing to pollution are actually, in most cases, those that could really find the money and find the time to clean up their act. You know, when you look at the mega dairies, when you look at, some of the huge factory farms that we've seen problems around, they have slashed standards in order to increase profit margins. They are people who are benefiting from the skewed way that our subsidies support industrial farming and do not penalise pollution.
As Britain prepares to leave the European Union, campaigners fear that environmental protection, much of which comes under EU regulation, may not be prioritised. Prime Minister Theresa May's government has vowed to launch a new environmental regulator to ensure a so-called green Brexit. Even so, one of the big advantages of leaving, according to many pro-Brexit politicians, was the chance to rid the country of what they say is over-regulation by Brussels. Box from Friends of the Earth is concerned the government will be pressured to make more concessions to big business that end up hurting the environment.
Our worry now is that we need all of those environmental protections to be brought over into UK law before we leave Europe. And we need not just the big directives, but we also need the principles. So, for example, the precautionary principle that ensures that we don't use chemicals when we don't know if they're going to kill our bees. The polluter pays principle, which ensures that mega farms do actually have to pick up the cost of the pollution that they cause and that they are held to account as much as possible. Those principles are really at risk when we leave the EU.
As many farms grow bigger to benefit from greater efficiencies in production, farmers are struggling to deal with the additional costs of preventing pollution. In many of the cases uncovered by The Guardian, underinvestment in equipment to prevent contamination was the cause. While most farmers obey environment regulation, the report says the worst offenders are not just flouting the law, they're also hampering attempts to investigate pollution. With an agriculture sector facing intense competition, a likely loss of EU subsidies, and a lack of government inspectors to police the problem, campaigners fear this is the perfect storm that could see contamination from farms become a serious public health crisis. Nick Martin, DW, London.
Ecuador is the world's largest banana exporter, and the European Union is the country's biggest customer. But producing cheap bananas comes at an extremely high price for Ecuadorian banana workers and the people who live in banana-growing areas. An investigation by the independent Danish media and research centre, DanWatch, has revealed that extremely hazardous pesticides, ones that are banned in the EU, are commonly used on Ecuador's banana plantations. While the country's agriculture industry is booming, local communities are paying the price. This investigative report was compiled by Lise Josefsen-Hermann with the independent Danish media and research centre DanWatch. It's presented by Natalie Muller.
It's a regular week in Ecuador's banana-growing region near the Pacific coast. A fumigation plane flies low overhead, spraying pesticides across the banana plantations. That happens once a week, 45 weeks a year. Bananas are big business in Ecuador. It's the second most important sector in the national budget after oil. Banana production directly employs about 200,000 people in the country. This is one of more than 5,000 plantations in Ecuador helping to meet the global demand for the sweet tropical fruit. But the pesticides used in banana production here are making the workers, their families, and even people just living in the banana area sick. Seriously sick. I'm visiting the village of San Pedro de Layi, some 250 kilometres west of the capital Quito, in the banana province of Los Ríos. It's lunchtime, and some villagers are resting in hammocks outside their houses, while children play in the dusty streets. Almost everyone around here works on the banana plantations, like 45-year-old Gregoria Ramirez. Gregoria worked on the banana plantation until she was pregnant with her son 6 years ago, but she was never able to go back to work because Tyson was born with several deformities.
I told the doctors that I worked on a farm where the plane was spraying fungicides. Then they said it was because of these chemicals that my son was born like that, with malformations.
The 6-year-old can't walk very well. He was born with a hole in his spine and liquid in the brain, a condition called hydrocephalus, and he will need diapers for the rest of his life because of his incontinence. Almost one-third of Ecuadorian bananas are exported to the European Union. At supermarkets in Germany, for example, consumers can buy a kilo of Ecuadorian bananas for about €1.50. But plantation workers in Ecuador are paying a high toll because of the toxic cocktail of pesticides they're exposed to. According to a new study published by the Ecuadorian environmental organisation Acción Ecológica, there are 26 pesticides commonly used on Ecuador's banana plantations. They also appear on the list of the most dangerous pesticides compiled by the Pesticides Action Network, or PAN. Of the 26, 7 are prohibited in the EU. And it's not only exposure to these chemicals from working on the plantations, which is a problem for Gregoria and her neighbours in the village San Pedro de la Yi.
Everywhere around us are banana plantations. In this direction, there's a banana plantation, and on that side, another banana plantation. Everywhere, we are surrounded by plantations.
Gregoria's community is suffering because of the frequent fumigation flights, and many children here are born with malformations. But it's not just children who are suffering from health problems caused by the pesticides. According to the World Health Organization, several of the pesticides used on the plantations here are carcinogenic. In Ecuador's banana provinces, the risk of getting cancer is 5.5 times higher than the national rate, according to studies. Researchers also found that banana workers have a 25% higher mortality rate than the rest of the population. A short drive from San Pedro de la Yi, I visit a school for children born with disabilities. Beatriz Garcia has been the school's director for several decades.
Wherever there's a concentration of banana workers, the level of children born with disabilities increases.
According to official data, almost twice as many children in the banana-producing southwestern province of El Oro are born with birth defects compared to the rest of the country. Adolfo Maldonado, a doctor who has worked on several investigations into the health impacts of the pesticides, says the figures speak for themselves.
The congenital malformations were markedly increased among the population in areas receiving the aerial fumigation. Apart from malformations, the prevalence of cancer, particularly leukemia, was also much higher.
Maldonado was also involved in an investigation carried out for the National Ombudsman's Office in 2007. That probe showed that the mortality of fumigation pilots is 40% higher than the rest of the population. We put these figures to Eduardo Ledesma, the president of the Ecuadorian Association of Banana Exporters. He firmly rejected the findings.
I do not recognize that kind of problem, because that could have been caused by other circumstances and not necessarily the banana plantations.
Ledesma claims there is no connection between pesticides and health problems in the area and says that no dangerous pesticides were used on plantations in Ecuador. In fact, he says he believes that all the studies by health experts and environmental groups are fabricated. Contrary to the claims of the banana industry, during our investigation with DanWatch, we found used containers with the pesticide gramoxone on several plantations. That's the commercial name for paraquat, which is banned in the EU. According to several experts we interviewed, this pesticide is one of the most commonly used chemicals in Ecuador's banana sector. It's cheap and effective against weeds, but it's also a particularly dangerous pesticide, one that's been linked to the development of Parkinson's disease and is also known for its high toxicity and for severely damaging vital organs like the lungs, liver, and kidneys. The use of potentially noxious chemicals in banana plantations isn't unique to Ecuador. The situation is similar in other banana-growing countries in the region, such as Colombia, Costa Rica, and Guatemala. Still, Ledesma of Ecuador's Banana Exporters Association denies there's a problem with the pesticides used on the plantations.
Le estoy contestando que es falso.
I'm answering you that it's false. I can assure you that if it's forbidden in the EU, then it's not used in Ecuadorian banana plantations.
Our findings and the testimonies of the banana workers tell a different story. But until the producers start to acknowledge and address the problem, things are unlikely to change.
Natalie Muller presented that report, compiled by Lisa Josephson-Hellman, together with Danwatch, a media research centre specialised on investigative journalism. In Kenya, farming used to be considered a job for old men, but a booming demand for coffee is attracting young people back to the countryside as an alternative to living in the slums of the capital, Nairobi. Since coffee prices have gone up, they think coffee growing could be a business of the future. Bettina Roo sent us this report. It's presented by Helen Sini.
Jackson Rugara, a young farmer, is walking ahead. The moist, fertile soil of the Kenyan highlands sticks to the soles of his black rubber boots. Jackson is passing his cabbage field towards his wooden shack. A sofa stands on the bare soil inside, and calendar sheets are stuck on the walls. There are pictures of European football players and hotels. Rain drums on the corrugated roof. There's a good reason why Jackson's decided to become a farmer.
I choose agriculture as a business.
I've chosen agriculture as my business because you can make good profits and you're your own boss, and there are no chances that somebody else can fire you.
Jackson is in his mid-20s. He's wearing grey overalls above his rubber boots. He's enthusiastic about his plans. He's joined a cooperative of young farmers who are cultivating coffee together. From their revenues, they offer microcredits to their members. And Jackson has used this borrowed money to buy a cow. He's keeping it behind his hut, and it's soon going to calve for the second time. He can cover the cost he spent on the cow by selling its milk, he says. Next year, the co-op members also want to buy some honeybees. Jackson discovered his enthusiasm for farming rather late. After school, he learnt to be an electrician and worked in Nairobi for 2 years. He only returned to Kangosho in the fertile high country of Kenya 3 years ago. Life is cheaper here than in the capital, he says.
In Nairobi, you can earn more money, but you also have to pay for everything. Water, electricity, rent, everything. Here, the costs are lower. For example, we grow our own vegetables. And that's also one of the reasons why we make a lot more money here than we would earn in Nairobi.
For years, agriculture was considered work for old men in Kenya. But these times are over. At least in the coffee-growing region in the centre of the country. Not far from Jackson's hut, the coffee cooperative Gikanda is growing their crops. Their coffee is well known for its quality, even on the international market. A seminar for coffee farmers is underway, and men and women of all ages are sitting on wooden chairs. Today's session focuses on the biological control of pests and how to increase the yields of coffee trees. The cooperative's average varies between 5 and 15 kilos of coffee per tree.
If I need more money, I have to produce a lot of coffee to get more kgs. So the secret is I have to produce a lot of coffee, a lot of kgs from the coffee, and I have to work for it. That is why I'm very much concerned. At the same time, I take this lad as my office. I must visit here every morning and see what is happening.
Charles Wanjohi is standing among his sturdy coffee trees. They're about his height and is harvesting the red coffee beans. He harvests around 12 kilos of coffee beans per tree in season, but he'd like to increase that. He'd also like to improve the quality, because that would increase his profits. At the moment, prices are good. 105 Kenyan shillings, that's around 85 euro cents, per kilo. But there were also years when coffee farmers here only made one-tenth of that price. One reason for the increase is the fact that the cooperative now has the fair trade label, and the farmers earn more money than with conventional coffee. Charles has even been able to expand his farms.
For those 20 years, I have been a coffee farmer. I can say that I have benefited a lot because I'm able to do some few. I have bought a land out of that. I have a plot somewhere. I'm building, and I'm not bad at all.
Jackson Mugara and his wife, Shomi Gadige, are content with their lives. They have two small children, and they're confident they'll be able to pay their school fees when they get older.
You know, in everything that you need, you must work, and work hard. So even here, you can get that money here. You can work hard, do your job, be determined on what you're doing, and everything goes. You get what you want.
Helen Sini with that story, filed by Bettina Rue.
Schütteln sich der Kaffee in der Kopf.
In der Kaffee-Buch,
jeder listen, singt eine Zeitung rum. Jeder deut sich nach einer Brüterin. Ob einmal wie der Schnüsschen schwarz, der Putzer hat so viel gesagt. Da haben sie nicht den größten Zopf. Hurra!
La 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 la.
India's northern Punjab state is often referred to as the country's breadbasket. For years it has prospered with bountiful yields of wheat and rice. But all is not well with the state's farmers. There's been an alarming rise in the number of suicides. Gayathri Vaidyanathan has the story.
On a humid September afternoon, Inderjeet Singh Jaiji pulls up to a farmhouse in a small village in North India. He walks into the yard. A cow and her calf are sheltering under a tree. A drab, three-room house anchors one end of the yard. He greets the family. There is the mother. Her name is
Amarjeet Kaur.
She has two kids, Gagandeep Kaur, who's 17 and studying
BA first year,
and 13-year-old Hardeep Singh, who, Jaiji says,
he says he's going to join the police.
Jaiji is holding a piece of paper. It is a list of suicides. This family is number 29. Jaiji reads out the details.
This is village Sangatpura. He committed, Nazar Singh committed suicide on 2nd June this year. He was an agriculturist. He had half an acre. And his debt is 4 lakhs. He committed suicide and he has two children.
The list has 46 names. It has all the farmers who've committed suicide in this area in 2017. Jaiji has been maintaining this list for the past 30 years. We're in Punjab, India's most productive agricultural state. The rice fields stretch into the horizon like a deep green sea. The plants are heavy with grain. Almost every year, it seems, Punjab's farmers managed to set new records for rice and wheat yields. Punjab is supposed to be India's farming success story. But behind that shine is Jaiji's inconvenient list. It suggests some farmers here are facing an economic crisis. He has recorded 2,400 cases of farmer suicide since 1988. That is from just 120 villages. There are 12,500 villages in total in Punjab. Farm worker Najar Singh could not make ends meet, his wife says. His living expenses far exceeded his earnings from farming, so he took out a loan. The interest accumulated over the years, and he had no hope of repaying it. So, one afternoon, his wife says,
he went inside, locked the room, and took poison. We took him to the hospital, but he died on the way.
That evening, we go to Jaiji's ancestral home in the village. The sun is sinking and goat herds are going home. Jaiji is 89 years old. He's wearing a black turban, which is a religious symbol of Sikhism. He has a flowing white beard.
And there is one more thing to know about him. He comes from a prominent family in India. His sister was one of India's last royals, the Queen of Patiala.
So we've been families for at least 300-400 years.
Jaiji cares so much about the villagers because for hundreds of years, they've been his family's tenants and have come to them with problems. About 30 years ago, villagers told Jaiji of a place where 9 people had committed suicide. He became worried and asked the health department to investigate.
But they couldn't find out the reasons. And they wrote in their report that the suicide's a genuine suicide, but it is due to the habit of the farmers to quarrel amongst themselves. Now, that didn't quite gel. So I sent them another list of something like 30 suicides in 5 villages.
The government claimed that there wasn't a major suicide problem.
Because Punjab is a prosperous state. Punjab is a role model of a farmer for the rest of the country. If the role model is dying, that means they're all dying there.
JG began documenting the suicides himself. He set up a network in the villages to investigate. As JG's list of suicides grew, he realized Punjab has a major problem. Villagers told him about bodies floating down a canal nearby.
We reported it to the police, we reported it to everyone. Police didn't react, police had 0 suicides.
We are at a pavilion overlooking the canal at Kanari. The walls of the pavilion are plastered with notices of missing persons.
These are the people. Their relatives come and put their photographs over here, hoping that someone will tell them that their body has come here.
2 years ago, Jaiji brought news reporters here who saw the dead bodies. Kanari made the headlines. Jaiji wrote letters to the President of India, to the Human Rights Commission, to anyone who would listen. The Punjab High Court finally ordered an investigation into farmer suicides in 2014. The investigators recently found that about 1,700 farmers in Punjab had killed themselves since 2000. Most of them were deep in debt. Jaiji has been helping the families for decades now. He's set up a non-profit that adopts families and educates the children of suicide victims.
Put them in any school. They must study. The objective was empowerment through education.
The next morning, Jaiji walks through a narrow alleyway past 2 large black buffaloes. He arrives at a green door set in the wall. The room is dark. 6 women slowly filter in. An old woman is holding a baby. This is the family of a suicide victim. Jaiji addresses a young woman. He finds out that she's dropped out of college because her family wants her married. He advises her mother to let her stay in school, and then he says goodbye. This girl, he senses, will not return to school.
Push them out, get them married and throw them out.
This is just the first visit, and he will do this all day today. I'm Gayatri Vaidyanathan in Punjab for DW.
And that's all we have time for on this week's edition of Living Planet. Our programme today was produced with the help of our studio manager, Ileana Giaducci, and sound engineers, Jürgen Kuhn and Sophie Weber. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes and on SoundCloud, or you'll find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. I'm Irene Quayle. Until next time, thanks for listening and bye for now.